Hey everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. It's great to be with you guys. It is really exciting times right now. There's lots of cool stuff going on. New partners getting on board, new projects. And so I'm just, my mind's kind of all over the place because there's so much going on, but I'm really excited. And I want to say thank you to those of you who have been with me from the beginning. It hasn't been that long. It seems like I just started the other day, and it also seems like it's been a really long time because I've been working very hard and grinding and just pushing because I love this stuff. It's become an obsession, and it's just, I feel like this is what God made me to do. So thank you if you've been sticking around from the beginning. If you're new, welcome. Thanks for coming, and I hope you'll subscribe and follow and all that good stuff. Today I have a really fun podcast. I want to mention a few things before I get into it, though, real quick. Lately, in the last couple weeks, this will be airing mid-May, this podcast episode. So the last couple weeks, including just yesterday, I released some new YouTube content. And it's something I'm kind of trying to do, something new. It's content that didn't really make it in its entirety into the hunt films, the episodes from some of my adventures this year, but it's still really good stuff that I wanted to share with you guys and share with the world. And it's content that I think diehard hunters will love. But what I'm excited about is it's also really geared towards those who are interested in hunting or open to hunting or maybe have no connection to hunting at all, but just think it's super cool and would love to learn more about it. So these last two videos, one was about cooking, meat preparation and care in the backcountry and cooking a backcountry wild-caught backcountry feast in Alaska. Really cool video. And then I just released a little mini documentary on how and why we used pack rafts on this last trip to Alaska. We took an epic pack raft journey and I was only able to put 30 seconds of that into the episode, but it's really worth talking more about. So that, I just put out a 30-minute video all about pack rafts, how we used them, why we used them, and how, all that good stuff. So, I think you guys will like it. I think maybe your friends who aren't hunters or family, please share it with them. And I'm really trying to reach out to that 80% in the middle, and show what us as hunters, what we truly are at our best, which is, conservationists, naturalists, lovers of wild places, providers, adventurers, explorers, all that good stuff. We've really gotten a bad rap in the media, and I want to try to reach out to those folks in the middle and to hunters as well and to express who we truly are and how hunting truly is conservation. Not enough people know about that. So help me to do that by sharing this content, specifically this new content that's less about the kill and more about the adventure. Share some of that stuff with some of your coworkers, some of your friends, some of your family that aren't hunters. That's what I've been doing. In fact, I was inspired to do this by some of my friends at my kids' school, some of the parents of my children's friends who are super interested in what I'm doing, but they're not hunters. But they're like, man, this is so cool. And they kind of inspired me and gave me some ideas to put out some different type of content. So check it out. Please share it. If you haven't yet, I'm going to keep saying it. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's just something you can do for free that helps me out big time. Another exciting thing, I just did a podcast with Jim Shockey the other day. It was amazing. Dude is the real deal for sure. He is who I want to be when I grow up. There's a lot of guys that are out there. He's a consummate professional, and he's the real deal. So be on the lookout. Probably next week, that episode with Jim Shockey will be out. And it's the first time I ever was a little nervous doing a podcast, to be honest with you. So bear with me on that, but I think it'll be good. Lastly, if you listened to last week's episode with Trent from Born and Raised, I didn't really realize it, but I kind of dropped it there. I'm going to go ahead and officially announce right now, I am going to be shooting Weatherby rifles this year, and I'm super excited to be working with Weatherby. It's a great American brand. Their new 307 line is killer. And I've always had kind of a connection with Weatherby. My first, and we get into it in this episode, but my first ever big game animal that I took on a trip out west when I was 14, it was a whitetail with a Weatherby rifle. Ever since then, I've loved them. The first nice rifle I bought on my own was a Weatherby Backcountry, which I still have and love. And now I'm going to be working with Weatherby this year and hopefully, you know, for years to come. They sent me one of their new Range XP in the 307 lineup, and I got it set up with my Leupold VX6 HD. I'm looking at it right now. And I'm telling you guys, the thing is a shooter. You know, it could be the extra weight, the longer barrel, but I was shooting, I got that thing zeroed in no time, and I was shooting tighter groups than I think I have with any other rifle. So again, really excited to be working with Weatherby going forward, and hopefully, you know, for years to come. Great company. I have tons of respect for Adam and obviously my friends over there, Tyler and Kobe. So it's really cool to see that come together. And also, you know, I just found out today I drew my Wyoming General elk tag. So super excited about that. Hopefully maybe kind of line up some kind of collaboration with Weatherby on that. Not sure, but looking forward to that. It's going to be an amazing, amazing season. I'm heading to Spain in a couple weeks to hunt with Pedro Ampuero. While we're here talking about announcements, if you guys are familiar with filming equipment at all, if you know anything about camera tripods, you'll probably know the name Manfrotto. Manfrotto is a super high quality, industry leading tripod company, that, you know, they're a huge name in Hollywood and filmmaking all over the world. One of the biggest, most recognizable brands in filmmaking, Manfrotto tripods. I've been using them for years. The camera that's recording this right now is on an older Manfrotto. So anyway, it's kind of a long story, which I'll get into later, probably in more detail, but they, this year, released a new tripod for the hunting market, and they reached out to me about helping them to kind of develop the product and be a spokesperson. They sent me one. I tested it out. It's a great, great tripod. Carbon fiber and aluminum, different options, and they're developing it to make it, and I'm helping them to develop to make it even better for hunters. So I'm very excited about that. And I just bring that up because after I do this hunt with Pedro, they're actually flying me out to their facility from Spain. They're going to fly me over to their facility outside of Venice, Italy, and I get to go check out their facility and walk around, meet their engineers, meet their team, kind of consult with them a little bit, and just kind of see what's going on over there. So I am super excited about that. It's going to be a really cool trip. And then, you know, this fall is going to be amazing. It's going to be another great season, and I cannot wait to start sharing this season two stuff with you guys. Lord willing, if everything stays on the track right now, I'm talking about season two will have 6 species firsts for me. Right now, I got 4 species first. First blacktail, Columbia blacktail, first elk, first caribou, first audad. If we tag out in Spain, it'll be two more chamois and roebuck. Just incredibly blessed. I just feel so fortunate. So tons of cool content about to come out. You gotta subscribe to my channel. And I can't wait to start dropping this stuff, guys. It's gonna be a huge year. I got some projects coming up with Leupold, CVA, and others. So probably going on quite a bit longer than I normally do, so I apologize. But just want to give you guys some updates since I have not really been doing as many lately. You know, lastly, I want to share with you guys this verse that came to my mind today as I was getting ready for this intro, which comes from probably my first or second favorite psalm in the Bible, Psalm 37, but verse 23 and 24. The Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. Though they stumble, they will never fall, for the Lord holds them by the hand. So stay connected to God, guys, and he will stay connected to you. He will delight in every detail of your lives. He'll direct your steps, and you're going to stumble. I stumble, but if you hold on to the faith, you will never utterly fall. And that just gives us confidence moving into life to do to do what we're called to do and to walk in our calling and purpose. So God is good. Life is good. I hope you guys are well. If there's anything I can do for you, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk with you, pray with you, whatever you need. I'm very reachable on Instagram through DMs. So I hope you guys are having a great start to your summer and spring. Gonna ask you one last time, as always, I apologize, but please, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, follow me on Instagram, leave me a written rating or review on Apple Podcasts, and share this show with friends and family. Those are all things you can do that help me out immensely and cost you $0. Also, if you're shopping at Mountain Ops or Black Ovis, or Seek Outside, a new one, you can use the code QUEST and save 10 to 20%. So use my codes. You can see in the description field all the codes. Pretty much everywhere the code is going to be QUEST. So check those out. I want to say thanks to my sponsors. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Guys, I am here with Tyler and Kobe, the Weatherby boys. How are we doing, guys?
Pretty darn good. It's good to be here. Good to catch up with you.
I know, man. Kobe, how you been, dude? I've been editing the elk hunt that we did together, and that was so fun, man. I know you've been like traveling all over the place. So what's up with you, man?
Just got back from New Zealand this last week. I'm super excited to see an edit on that elk hunt we did together. I was just telling Tyler, about it.
Asking
when it was going to be out. I was like, I don't know when his new season airs, but it'll be out here eventually. And
exciting on that. I'm going to, I worked with a young other editor guy named Brett. He has a thing called Elkhorn Media. And, he actually did, I just like gave him a drive with that hunt on it. And I was like, I want to do a completely separate YouTube version. And I didn't really give him like any direction. I was just like, edit this. And I just wanted to see what it was. And he got back to me something that's really cool. And it's like more vlog style and a little longer than my TV episode will be. So it's pretty cool. And I think I'll release that before even probably like, you know, like around the start of elk season, but it's cool, man.
Right on. That's cool to hear. Yeah, I know Brett over there.
Okay.
So yeah, he's
I tried to snag him, but Eastman snagged him on me.
Yeah, Brian, he's been out with Brian and what's the other guy? I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, it's been busy over here. We've had a lot of hunts this year already since I've got here.
Yeah.
7 months ago today, actually.
Yeah, but with how many hunts and how many trips you've done, I don't know, we've even been on together, it feels like we've been here for 2 years already.
It does.
With all the adventures. So.
Tyler, when did you start at Weatherby?
I started almost 2 years ago now.
Okay. So. And you're coming up on almost a year, Kobe? Man, I keep losing these guys.
The joys of internet in Wyoming. So we'll just chalk
does it sometimes
up.
Just like stop on you?
Yeah, it just literally stopped. We have our podcast studio. It's way better lighting in there. This is my office, but
yeah.
I guess we got to go hardwired connection.
Yes. Yeah,
so. That's all good. Well, I was saying, so you've been at Weatherby like about 2 years now, and Kobe, you're coming up on almost a year, right?
Yeah, I think it's 7 months to the day or 8 months to the day.
Yeah.
Word.
And that, so 7 months to the day, 2 days later, we went on our first trip. So it's like you're here for 2 days, and then we're like, Bombing into the back country.
I think we
was that the Kodiak trip.
No, that was just his deer hunt. But the week after that, we released 3 new guns, a bunch of new cartridge chamberings, and a new 410 bore in the side by side. So that second week there, I had 5 straight days of content that I had to create within like 10 days. It was like just hit the ground running. It was perfect.
You guys have been like slamming new products out, like tons of new stuff.
Yeah, last year
it's been super fun.
Yeah, last year, so 2023 was the most new products in a single year that we truly released at Weatherby. And then like this year is not slowing down. So we've launched launched a new shotgun, a new Model 307 Woodstock gun.
Yep. A couple Vanguards.
A couple Vanguards already. And then we're not slowing down. I feel like we have a product launch like every single month until this fall. So it should be pretty darn fun.
We have some really cool ones coming up too.
We got cool products, and then man, we got some cool content coming too.
So. Yeah, some really cool films, launch videos, and then just last 2 days I've just been working on editing photos from New Zealand.
Okay.
I took 870 gigs worth of media.
Oh my gosh, nice.
7 or 9 days, something like that.
And I heard you fell down a mountain too.
I did fall down the mountain, like not just a little bit. Either.
Okay, so what happened there, man? You gotta tell me the story.
Well, yeah. So I've been on a lot of steep hillsides and gnarly terrain in my life, and this is one of the steeper, gnarlier parts. But I've been in like sketchier situations. It wasn't like a sketchy situation. It had been raining for a couple days, and it's like super wet grass, and we're on a vertical hillside, and below me there's not like a cliff face, like a vertical face, but it's like rock face that you wouldn't ever pick to like hike up. You definitely wouldn't want to fall down it,
right?
Which I then ended up doing. One of my foot gave out on some mud, and my momentum just got turned downhill. I had a couple steps before the rock started, so I like tried to stop, couldn't. I had both cameras on the cotton carrier, so I wasn't like filming. Had a trekking pole,
which so, I know like, you're more up. Worried about your cameras than your own body.
Oh yeah, that. Yep, exactly.
get there.
Jumped to the first rock, and then like almost catch myself, like teeter, go to the next one. By then, my momentum like running.
Yeah.
And then I just start skidding, like trying to dig the heels and hands in. And then I start just like rolling, just doof, doof, doof.
Oh my gosh.
And at one point, like one of my last couple rolls, I just see a camera levitating 15 feet in the air, got ripped off the cotton carrier, just like hits the ground, pieces go everywhere. And it was like, took me like 5-10 seconds, but I was like, I'm all right. I probably went like 50-60 yards, like at least.
Oh my gosh.
Like disappeared from sight, like. Adam and Brenda look like, and the guide Sam, they're like, that could have been fatal. Like,
dude, lucky I was laughing about it, but that's
a bunch
really
of bumps and bruises and scrapes.
Dude, thank God you're right,
actually
man.
Fared a lot better than I would have imagined. So I had the A7S III in a cage with a handle on each side. So those handles and the cage is bent. The XLR mic system I'm running is completely destroyed. It's like a top handle with XLR audio built in, and then 24-70 lens, cracked the barrel on the inside, used it the rest of the trip though, and then monitor trash.
You weren't hurt though?
My knee's pretty stiff still, elbow's a little stiff, bunch of bumps and bruises on like my hip.
Good Lord, man.
I'd say that my Stone Glacier backpack definitely like saved my life having that on, because you know, just the padding on the back, my back never hit a rock. Like, probably would have broke a hip if I didn't have that hip belt on, because the contusion on my hip was just massive. So it humbled me. I was
dude,
like,
that's serious, man.
Well, after I said, I'm like, I'm okay. Then I just let up a big, ah, they're like, oh no, he's hurt now. But I was just so pissed about the camera. You know, like, oh, what just happened to the camera? I'm supposed to be.
Half of the things you broke, you had just gotten like the week before.
Yeah, that too. Like that whole audio system and monitor were new, and that lens wasn't that old. So, but
thank God you're all right. You can replace camera gear. You can't replace knees and hips. And like, if you guys are listening, Kobe's like, what? You're like 6'5" or something.
6'4",
yeah, and I can't imagine you tumble. Like, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. That's like hardcore.
It was funny about 2 hours later when we got to the bottom, and Joseph von Benedict was with us. He's a writer, and
I know Joe.
He was at the bottom, and he was filming through the phone scope, and then the fog kind of rolled in, and he stopped like a minute before I fell, and he said he just heard a rock rolling, and then. He's like, oh, hopefully that's just a rock. And then he heard it again. And then he said he heard explicit of me rolling down the mountain while the rocks are rolling. So,
oh, man.
Yeah.
But you were on that trip too, Tyler? Or?
No, I wasn't. So my perspective of this trip is I get like a, cause the time change is way different. I get like an in-reach like message from Adam, and it's the, hey, just so you know, Kobe fell. Like bad, and then the whole spiel of like, man, if it would have been Adam or Brenda, it would have been a real bad deal. Again, just kind of like the circumstances. Now we're laughing about it, but yeah, it was probably very scary in the moment.
Yeah, that is scary, man.
Like all of us were shaken up. Like I was shaken up, but they were like mentally like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I like made sure I was okay and was like, we can drop off the mountain and not keep chasing this tar. And I was like, no, like not broken. Like, let's keep going. Let's go get this thing, make a better story out of it.
And nice. These trips like feel so adventurous. And like when you're doing hunting trips, you don't like almost something like work is like back burner, but you're doing more stuff. So like when Kobe got back, it's like incident report.
Yeah. What hurt the employee? Wet mud is what they wrote.
Yeah.
So. Dang, dude. Yeah, that's intense, man. So you've been on a bunch of different adventures since you've been there. And Tyler, I know you've just been turkey hunting with the new shotgun. Is that right?
Yeah, so far this spring, we've done a couple of adventure hunts. We did an adventure odd hunt, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And I did that this year too. That was a really fun hunt. I actually booked another one. I'm going to do it again next year.
We are probably going to do something again. It was like one of those hunts that it's like, you can make it as hard as you want to. And like when we killed my oddad, we were 2 miles from where we packed in kind of thing. Like we're doing a bunch of glassing, but then just those hills, it was a kind of a fun dust off of, we did ours in March. So it was like filling that cup full of like the backcountry experience that you want in the middle of the winter. So,
I'd say that.
And dude, the desert in the winter time is so cool. It's just cool being in the desert.
So, but yeah, then so far this spring, we've done a couple of like Eastern turkey hunt stuff. So being out west, we haven't really done a ton of those for like Weatherby anyway. So we did.
Well, let's be honest. Stuff. Eastern turkeys are way harder to kill anyway.
Yes. We just did a podcast about this. Eastern turkeys versus Western turkeys. And,
You could hunt with a baseball bat out west. And what's that?
Yeah. You just barely call and those turkeys out here come running in. But yeah, we wanted to go to some of like the really cool. So we went to like Mississippi. There's no better turkey hunting culture than in like Mississippi River, quarter mile away kind of thing. And then when they were in New Zealand, we did Kentucky as well. So we flew into West Virginia, so not too far from you guys. So we were like hunting, it was pretty mountainous. It was kind of weird being in Kentucky and it being big rolling drainages and stuff. So.
Yeah, Appalachia. Were you in Eastern Kentucky?
Yeah. So like Appalachia's got some mountains. West Virginia. So that was cool.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That's kind of, where I grew up. I was never too much of a turkey hunter, but I grew up with waterfowl. You've been doing a lot of bunch of that stuff too, huh? You were like out in Arkansas or somewhere.
Yeah, Kobe and I did Arkansas.
We hammered the waterfowl.
Yeah, we did Kodiak. We did Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. We did a whole bunch of.
Here's a question for you, Kobe. Because I started filming with waterfowl, and then I went to Western hunting. How was that transition to waterfowl? Because it is not easy to capture waterfowl.
It is so hard. It is the hardest thing by far.
It is.
It's not even comparable that I've tried to film, because half of it is like, man, I wish every time I went out waterfowl hunting, I could have a second shooter with me, because I felt like I had to make the decision all the time. Am I filming birds falling out of the sky with a little bit more zoom lens, or am I trying to film the guns in use and the interactions between people and the blind? I would tripod a camera occasionally to be able to do that, but not all situations let me do that. So it was really hard on like balancing that and then filming birds and maybe manual focus, maybe autofocus. How much weeds do you have in grass do you have in front of you blocking it? It was so many different variables. The wind is as big of a variable in duck hunting as anything, and it has as big of an effect on the camera guy as it does how the ducks come in, because if there's a good wind, they're constantly going to do the same thing, so you can kind of predict them at least. Where you don't have a wind, it's like, where are they coming from? Over the head, left, right?
Yeah, you never know. So and sometimes they're just like, they're just there.
It was hard.
Yeah, it's like a definitely like torn like perspective, because it's like the blind stuff is like the culture camaraderie.
Yeah.
You get those real authentic moments where it's like when you like either miss, everyone's ragging on everyone.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you want to grab those experiences or do you want to get the birds falling? Which you need a little bit of both, but I tend to, with the waterfowl stuff, I feel like it's really a lot about the culture and like the camaraderie in the blind. And I really
really
luckily
like
there's not much BSing and camaraderie going on when the bird's about to decoy anyway, so you can kind of transition a little bit. But capturing waterfowl is really hard, and like when I was doing it, we were standing in beaver swamps. You know, like if you drop anything, it's done. And like, you know, freezing cold, wearing waders, and trying to get like a monopod in there and like flooded timber. Very difficult to do.
So, yeah.
Hats off to those guys.
I would say the easiest duck hunt to film was one I thought was going to be the hardest. It was sea ducks because they come in so fast and low. And we were like out in a boat or on the shore. I could just track them forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that was actually the easiest and the most fun because it was Kodiak, Alaska. So
They don't really drop out of the sky. No. So it's like same plane the whole time.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I do like, I don't know too much about you, Tyler. I know Kobe pretty well. We did a hunt together. By the way, just going through that footage, man, like that was such a team effort, dude. Like, thank you. You helped me out so much on that hunt, man. Like there were so many times I look back at the camera, I just look like a complete idiot. Like, what do I do? And like, you're always there helping me out, dude. And it was cool. And I just had a blast hunt with you. And it's another thing that like, I don't know, something about, I was looking at the footage the other day when you got that huge cactus just jammed into your shin. Oh. And my buddy who Brett, he put that into the, I didn't really have time to put that into the TV episode, but he put that into the YouTube one, and I was just laughing really hard.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I got like a giant like 8-inch like jumping cholla like in my shin, like going vertical, like
deep
in the dark, like deep. It was
I'm like in the muscle. But yeah,
everything,
man,
I could do to like not out let out a big yell, but I let out nice.
So like, did you put just above your gators or what?
We didn't have gators on that day.
Yeah, he wasn't wearing, and like you could hear it when he pulled it out, it was like when it came out, like it made a sound when he pulled it out. Like, it was in there. But anyway, dude, that was fun. Thanks for your help on that, dude.
Yeah. And, great, man. Love elk, as you know, as you witnessed firsthand, hard to pull me away from those beasts. So
you are the true elk boy. the other dude's not, you are the real elk boy. Anyway, but Tyler, I don't know much about you, man. So like what's your story? Where are you from? Like how'd you end up doing what you're doing? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so I grew up in Missouri, went to college, played a little football, then went back to Mizzou, graduated from there. And honestly, right out of college, I was a commodities trader. And it was just like a job that I was good at. And I absolutely
hated which kind of commodities exactly?
So like, Chicago, it's all like commodities that are traded on like Chicago Board of Trade. So like corn, soybeans, wheat were kind of our big thing.
So you're like a stockbroker almost, but with.
Yeah, like it's like the stock market for ag. Yeah, essentially that's what I was. So it's like numbers and like reading charts and like taking positions and hedging and doing all the things. And that job, I did not love, definitely did not love it, but it took me to Colorado and I like fell in love with the mountains. So I did that for three or so years. And then I finally just like pretty much realized that I cannot do this for the rest of my life.
Wait, so they sent you out to Colorado on a business trip or something, or you went out there hunting?
We actually had like a remote office there. It was based in Kansas City, but they had an office in Colorado. So
and they sent you to work there?
Yeah. So like as I was like progressing, I was doing my training and all that stuff, and I was doing well. They're like, "What do you want to do?" And I'm like, "Man, I don't even know if I want to work here, but if I do, I want to go to the Colorado office." And they sent me out there. So. Just kind of really like, and during that time, I felt like I was like living for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I've always been competitive. It's like hunting was like since college has kind of filled that void of like wanting to get out, be physical, do all these things. Right. So I finally just one day, I actually had gotten a promotion. It sounds so silly. And I'm like looking at my life was like, if I keep going down this path, I'm going to be so far in that I can't not do this. Yeah. So I actually just quit my job. And I had a few, like,
did you know what you wanted to do, or you were just like, I don't want to do this?
Yeah, I just knew I did not want to do this. And so I'm from Columbia, Missouri, and that's home of like Midway USA and American Outdoor Brands, which is a big outdoor company. And that just was happenstance. So before I got a job there, I actually ended up getting a job at American Outdoor Brands. It's like, I'm either going to get a job here and I'm going to do anything from customer service to working in the warehouse, or I'm going to go and be a guide somewhere. I had my parents were living in Du Bois, Wyoming. And there was a guy there that I kind of knew, and I was like, I'm either going to be a Packer or I'm going to get a job. So I ended up getting my foot in the door at American Outdoor Brands, which is some of the brands like Caldwell, Frankfurt, some of these like bigger industry
some
names.
Big stuff. Brands, yeah.
Yeah, so I got into sales there, and I knew I wanted to be in marketing. So as soon as a marketing job opened up, I transitioned and got.
Did you do business in school, or did you do marketing at all in school or anything?
I did. I did ag business. So the commodities trader that I was, that was like one of the jobs that like when you go to school, that's the job you get, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so then I transitioned to that, and then was working in the outdoor industry for a brand called Meat Your Maker. It's a direct consumer meat processing thing.
Yeah, I know I know the brand.
Yeah, so we did a lot of content, a lot of marketing. It was a very fun brand. And I actually just happenstance met some of the Weatherby guys on an event that I was hosting. And we just kind of hit it off. And at the end of the day, I was actually trying to purchase a Weatherby because I need a new rifle. And they're like, oh, hey, by the way, we have the marketing job open. You should apply. And I'm like, man, I would love to move back out to the West. So,
were they in Wyoming at that point yet?
They were in Wyoming. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I've been kind of in the outdoor industry for like last six or so years. So.
Nice. So what's your actual day to day? Are you like shooting stuff like Kobe too, or are you more on the business side of the marketing? Like what exactly do you do? I don't even
really know. So I'm more on the business side. So I guess my title is the marketing manager, and that means a lot in different companies. So for Weatherby, we're small, still family owned business kind of thing. So we don't use any agency work. So everything that people see from, our social posting to the graphics, to ads in magazines, to videos produced, videos shot is all in house. We have like a very small, but like nimble team. And I guess I kind of handle all of that. So I do everything from partnership contracts, marketing budgets, PR, advertising and all that stuff. So that's kind of, nice. And then we're in charge of the website, social, and we have a team of five that kind of handle all that. So,
and sometimes you get to go on cool hunts.
Yeah, that's so everyone gets to see the cool hunt side, but there's the grinding. There's still spreadsheets. There's still our budgets. So, it's a blessing to get to go do some of those activities. So,
absolutely, dude. What do you think your favorite thing you've done while you've been there?
My favorite thing I've done has actually been I'll give you two answers. From a business perspective, just our launch and how we did the Sorix launch of all the content that we produce and all the how-tos and the product testing on that. Because, in marketing, we get to go on these hunts and we still get to fine-tune and tweak products while we're in the field. So that whole process was just amazing. And I think our launch turned out really good. That was kind of Kobe's first content to product launch video as well. So it was just kind of fun that our team like really crushed that one.
Yeah.
But from a hunting standpoint and a trip standpoint, going on Kodiak, there's just no replacing going to Alaska. So Kodiak trip was just pretty much amazing. Really cool. That, and then I did a DIY float trip with someone for moose up on the Hall Road. It was like the adventure where you fly to Fairbanks and then you drive.
Dude, I'm doing that this year.
I did that last September, yeah. And it was pretty awesome.
I'm going in September too. We should talk a little bit off air maybe.
Yeah. We definitely should talk about that. But that was a fun trip. Just the whole DIY aspect.
Did you guys get a moose?
We did. So it was a media trip. We had a writer from Peterson's Hunting, and on the last morning, he was able to shoot one. It was like day 11 kind of thing. We had been in moose, seeing moose, and then finally, it was like last minute, and it was a good like 57, 58-inch
bull. Yeah, because they got to be big to be legal for non-residents.
Yeah, so we had for non-residents, it's either 50 inches wide or four brows. So we saw probably four shooters. Mm. A couple of them were too far away, and then we had like where if we were both going to tag out, we had one that was like, he was either 49 and a half inches or 50 and a half inches, but he only had three brows. So it was like one of those ones where we got to watch him all day and could have, but it's like, oh, he's too close. So.
Yeah. That's awesome, dude. Alaska, I definitely want to talk to you off air about that. Cause I'm going first like two ish weeks of September, and I got, already rented my truck out of Fairbanks, and like I had a pilot call me back with some cancellations who's got a pretty good reputation, but like I kind of want to just the purity of like driving up there and doing it like really DIY is like, I want to do it. So let's talk off air.
Yeah, we'll talk. This was the same thing. Just we did use an airboat transportation, but again, okay, with him being just a transporter, we picked the spot on the map. He was very by the book where he's not allowed to help or do anything. So we did all the research before and we got into a pretty busy spot. So
that's cool, man. Yeah. The trip I did last year to Alaska was a float trip. We took an airboat up. And then, cause I called the guy and he was booked for like 2 years. And I was like, what if you take me up on an off day, like way farther than you normally go, and then I'll float out by myself, you know, to pick me up. And he's like, I think we could do that. So he did it and it was sick, man. It was a 2 day, like 70 river mile float out on pack rafts with two caribou bowls that we got, but like just epic adventure. Anyway, the Storks, I want to talk to you about that real quick, because you guys are known as like you're kind of more known as a rifle.
Yeah.
I mean, you've made shotguns forever, but like your rifles are like known. But I think you guys really stepped up the bar in this one. I haven't got my hands on one yet, but I looked at them pretty close. And you know, I'll probably talk more about this, or maybe I have at this point, with folks, but just so people are, you know what's going on when I'm listening, I am going to be shooting Weatherby this year, which I'm stoked about. And I just kind of got my first one back here set up behind me. But I wanted to say was, haven't got my hands on one yet, but it looks really cool. Because you guys, they're made in Italy and assembled here. Tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah. So cool thing about Storks is it is made in Italy. We have a partner over there who manufactures them. If you're up on your shotgun, like knowledge and stuff, Italy, that core region of Italy is just known for making really good shotguns. Like
Beretta, Benelli.
Yep. All the big bees are right there in Italy.
Even the really expensive stuff. Like,
yeah.
So I used to work at a skeet range and these guys had like $30,000 shotguns and stuff, like just wild. But anyway.
Yeah. So we partnered, we have a manufacturer there that we work with, and it's actually kind of a fun story because they're also a family owned business and like second or third generation. So it's like a father son there as well. So it kind of fits into our ethos of being a little bit smaller and like having a very like targeted approach. So we have, yeah, it's Italian made, it's an inertia shotgun, but essentially they build it, but we design it. So we kind of, it's a based off our, we had an 18i shotgun for a while, but we wanted to make it better. Essentially we went in and just like, if we're, you know, our team of designers and product development, there's a lot of waterfall guys here. So we're like, what do we want in a shotgun? So we went through and did the whole deal. And, you know, I would check out the launch video. You can go through all the features there, but there's a lot of cool aspects. And then, yeah, all the finishes, we're doing those here in Sheridan. So it's fun. Yep. We essentially get in a barreled action, right, for a shotgun. And then we do all the stock painting, all the assembly, all the finish inspections and boxes.
From what I looked at, it looks a lot like, so I've been shooting the same Benelli Super Black Eagle since I was 16 years old. And I love it. Not going to lie. Like all the paint's rubbing off of it, but I am due for a new shotgun. But anyway, it looks almost like that. Like the inertia system is similar. You got some of the features. I don't know. That's kind of what my impressions of it were.
If you've shot that and have enjoyed that, it'll be like a very similar feel. We like to also say that we bring a lot of value just because of where we price ours as well. So under $1,500 for an Italian made shotgun, which is really pretty darn good. So, but yeah, if you have shot that before and really like that and are in the market for a new one, this is going to have very similar feel.
Yeah. I like inertia guns because you can just shoot them and shoot them and shoot them and never clean them.
That's same with me. I'm a big fan of like a stepped rib, and we went super aggressive on the receiver for competition cut, just because when it's a little bit more square, your fingers can get caught when you're wearing gloves and when you're hunting and all that stuff. So we really fine tuned this one.
Yeah. And Kobe, you shot all that launch stuff, no?
Yeah, I did. It was 95% of it is mine. We have there's some clips in there from another guy that from Adam DeMarchi, who does the final approach stuff.
Yeah,
he's good. Yeah, got on a couple hunts with him, so bumped some stuff off him, but that was a really cool project, especially for me, because it was like first week or two after getting here. It's like, hey, this is one of the big things we have on the docket. We have these trips that we're going to do to specifically document the waterfowl. We need to make a launch video off of it. We're going to make some mini series videos off of it probably, but it was, when it came down to it at the end of the season, after six hunts, I think is what I had stuff off of. It was, it's like a 5-something minute video, and it took me darn near, a month to do. Like, I put so much love into that video.
That's awesome. Dude, those are really hard to do. Those super short, like hype almost type things.
Yeah.
They're like the hardest thing to do ever. They stress me out.
I like redid that video so many times.
Yeah.
And
getting the right music and like timing it out, which music. I do like that part.
Don't even get me started on the music. I literally have probably a full, like, almost 40-hour work week into just finding the music for that day.
Like, see, I can get too in the weeds there. I have to just, like, find one. If it's just like, okay, this will work, I just go with it. Because if you get too in the weeds, you can just spend, like, months on that.
100%. I've talked to Dusenberry about it a bit. We were chatting about it, and he's like, doesn't get easier. I'm like, dang it, don't tell me that.
Have you switched over to Premiere yet?
No. Absolutely not. They tried to get me to, they didn't try and get me to switch when I started here, but I tried, they have Premiere, so I tried using Premiere.
Yeah.
And the amount of BS I dealt with that is like, it crashed so many times on me.
Oh, really? Like, that's probably your system. I don't know. Anyway.
But I just, and I don't like the flow of it. Like, I just got DaVinci down so good. And the color tools are just next level in DaVinci.
Yeah. Whatever you learn on is really
good. It's more intuitive to me.
Yeah.
So I've really gotten the hang of DaVinci, though. In the 7 months, the amount of how far my video editing's come has been a big step up.
I'm looking forward to seeing some more of your long form stuff that you're going to be coming out with probably soonish, huh?
Yeah. We got like, almost one a month for a while.
Yeah, starting in May, we'll have like a video, like a lifestyle video per month, pretty much. We have a lot of mix. We got everything from elk hunts to sheep hunts to.
When do you start dropping hunt films? When do you start dropping more of the hunt films from last year?
So I think we're gonna start end of May. We have an Africa film that one won't be yours, but we're gonna do an Africa film. Adam and Brenda and our CEO Luke went to Africa.
Yep.
And they did a really cool, the outfitter they went with, they give like most of their proceeds back to a church there. So they did a bunch of mission work while they were there, which was really cool. The story there will be really good. And then after that, we'll have, we'll watch Kobe's sheep film that he edited. He didn't shoot it, but he edited it.
Part of it.
I remember you were just starting that, like right when we were like on our hunt. You were talking about it a little bit or something.
Yep. So Luke shot the Yukon portion. I shot the Montana portion. And then I put both of the sheep hunts together and made it one where it goes back and forth. It turned out, I'm pretty proud of it. It turned out good.
Cool.
And then at the end of July, July 31st, we're doing a Weatherby Film Festival here in Sheridan. So we'll have probably two new videos in that one.
Elk.
Yeah. We'll have elk, and then we did a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation one, and then we have a couple of videos that we haven't filmed that might premiere there. But we have dates set. It's pretty fun. We do a video night in downtown Sheridan. There's like a historic theater called the YO Theater. Yeah. So
I want to do something like that around here, but there's not really the spot. But that sounds cool. Hold, I need to change one of my camera batteries really quick. Give me 1 second. Sorry.
That's so funny. It took you like half a day to realize that that was.
I know, and I didn't realize it until Adam said it. That is a pretty good photo.
Yeah, that's a good photo.
I kind of want to put my one Alaska photo that I got there.
Did you order them?
No, I would like to, though. Oh. I have that one that turned out pretty good.
Oh, you're... Oh,
the one that I took.
Yeah, gotcha. I was like, the one? Which one's the one?
This one's pretty cool.
The moose antler or the looking over the...
Oh, the landscape one.
Yeah.
Place that one. That would be kind of cool. I think it turned out.
Right there.
Oh yeah, this one here. That one would look cool up there.
Yeah, I think that's great.
All right, sorry about that.
We back.
We're back. So, yeah. And just so you guys know, I just kind of decided as we were talking, I'm going to do like a midweek short solo podcast, just talking about different companies I'm like working with this year, just because I feel like it needs a little, like, I don't, I'm not going to go like super in detail, but I just feel like I should, I don't know, explain it a little, like why I'm jumping, you know what I mean? Like not jumping, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to talk through that a little bit more with people.
I have a quick question before we get back to it. Do you have a tripod company? Do you, that you work
tripod?
With? Yeah, do you work with like Tricer or no?
Actually, Manfrotto from Italy reached out to me. They're starting this new. Have you seen their new one they're coming out with?
No, I haven't.
They're launching a hunting tripod. It's right here. So I actually just signed something with them like a couple days ago. That's another new one.
That's cool. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway. Okay. Oh yeah. What was I gonna say? So yeah, I'm just gonna talk through that a little bit with people. But and I'll probably say this again when we start, but dude, this thing shoots, I think it shoots better than my Seekins did. Like seriously.
Yeah, I mean, we know everything's always gonna shoot good, so we usually feel pretty confident about everything that we send out. So. Yeah.
I don't know if it's like the, well, I'm not, I would say it is a little heavier and like longer, but man, that thing was like, it was shooting really good yesterday. Anyway, we'll get into that. I don't know if I even, so this is kind of interesting. The first time I ever traveled out of state, killed a big game animal, and it was out west, Texas, if you want to consider Texas west, and ever killed an animal with a rifle, was one trip my dad took me to South Texas when I was a kid, like 14. Did the, you know, whitetail and hog type deal. But the dude that had us out to his place had like a full lineup of Mark Fives of like every chambering. And they all had like matching Swarovski scopes. He was like loaded. And so anyway, my first, that I borrowed one of his rifles and shot my first ever big game animal with a rifle, my first trip, et cetera, et cetera, with a Weatherby. I don't even know which one it was, but ever since then I had this thing. I just kind of had like a little just affinity towards Weatherby. So I am really excited to be working with the guys a little bit. And you guys sent me this back here behind me, this Range XP. It's a new 307 action, I guess. And I just had the thing of the range yesterday. I wanted to make sure I got out and actually shot it before I talked to you guys. And it is a shooter. Like, I'm not even kidding. I had the thing zeroed and, like, you know, and shooting tiny, for me, tiny groups. And I think I shot 15 rounds. And I was like, I'm good.
I just left. Yeah, nice. That's always, like, the fun experience. Like, when you can pull a rifle out of the box and then you just feel confident. I feel like that's, like, half of like every hunter's problem is just like the confidence that they have with their equipment and shooting and stuff. So like getting out, practicing, making sure you are dialed in. That's always like a tip that I give to guys. It's just like, be confident about your setup. And like, if you're a guy who's never mounted a scope, learn to mount a scope. There's a, all you can do is trial and error. And if you don't do it right, then you'll learn. But it also helps when you're on that hunt. And like, if something goes wrong, you can dial it back in.
For sure. And I have to say, I just feel like I have to say this for people listening, just full transparency. Weatherby is not paying me a dime to say this. They did send me a rifle. I think you guys might send me another one, but I'm not getting paid a dime to say this. I'm giving my honest opinion. The thing was a shooter. So, I feel like I should grab it really quick just to like show people if you're watching on YouTube. First of all, the action is insanely smooth. I noticed that right out of the way, out of the box. I like the shape of the stock a lot. It's got this adjustable thing here. I don't know what you call this.
A comb or a cheek piece. Yeah.
Yeah. I just call it a cheek piece, but I like the 5-round mag. And yeah, the spiral fluting on the barrel is really nice. Got a nice muzzle brake. It was really fun to shoot. So I like it. Good work. Tell me about the 307 line a little bit though.
Yeah. Our 307 line is like expanding. So we launched the Range XP and the Alpine MDT kind of, we launched them together.
That's that slick one with the folding.
Yeah. With the MDT chassis. So with the, so for people who don't know a ton about like Weatherby actions, we have three actions now. We have our Mark V, which is kind of our upper end historic action that we've had since 1958, yep. Kind of made Weatherby a Weatherby, right? And then in the 1970s, we launched the Vanguard lineup, and we wanted to make sure that we had a rifle that was still super quality, but a little bit more affordable. And since then, both of those, you know, Mark V's and Vanguards, they kind of come for a hunter, like right out of the box, you should be able to like shoot it and have no problems. There's not a lot of custom upgrades or anything that you need to do because we try to put all that work into the rifle in the factory. Mm-hmm. Well, we wanted to come out with an action. If we were going to do a new action, we wanted something that would fall in between, you know, Vanguard and Mark V, be made in the US, and then have that kind of historic 700 footprint that's pretty popular with like gun builders today. So Remington 700 has been around forever, but if you look at all these custom actions in the industry today, or if you see a custom gun, they're the footprint or like the things that are acceptable, like stocks, triggers, and all those things, aftermarket accessories are based on that, that you can do a lot of plug and play.
Yeah.
So like if you ever wanted to take that Range XP and drop a different stock into it or a different, it's going to be compatible with like a ton of different things. So we wanted to bring that to Weatherby because this will open it up a lot more for one, that hybrid hunter who wants to do a little bit more shooting, maybe do an NRL hunter, or maybe they want to start with just the builder's action and build their own custom rifle. So this platform was really aimed to do that. We called it Model 307 because we're pretty much paying homage to Wyoming. That's the area.
That's your area code, right? Yep.
Yeah. So we wanted to do that. And yeah, it's made here in Sheridan. So
you guys make the whole thing right there?
So we have a partner that helps us on some of the actions, but we do make a bunch of the actions here. And then all of the other stuff, it's all built here. It's all, you know, obviously, it's all pieces, right? And then people are building them, contouring barrels.
Right.
And then your partner, floating.
But your partner's in the U.S. as well?
Yeah. The only thing in that's not U.S. is TriggerTech, the trigger. They're a Canadian company.
We can throw a bone to the Canadians.
Yeah, TriggerTech makes a really good trigger.
As long as it's not like Chinese.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's got a Magpul magazine, which is cool because you can just, they're like available. And like, because with my last setup, it was kind of a custom mag and it was kind of hard to get a hold of them sometimes.
So we went with Magpul too because they're also a Wyoming company, which is kind of fun. So
I
tried to do a little bit of the collab there on the Range XP for Wyoming.
This is a really random question, but is it just a question of like timing and capacity and all that stuff as to which actions are made at your facility and which ones are made by your partner? Or is it certain models or?
Yeah. It's totally that right there. So it just, we are making a lot of them. So all of them are built here. We do a little bit both on each action. So it is just a function of how many can we make. So we have a very small.
If I sent you my Siri number, could you tell me where you made it?
I probably could, yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll do that. But okay, cool. Well, what are the other ones? Can you talk about anything? I know you got some cool stuff coming down the line, or is it too early, or what? How do you?
We can talk a little bit. So we did, within the Model 307 line, we also did just launch a Woodstock gun for kind of the traditional Weatherby guys who wanted the new action with kind of an old school look.
That's the one they took to Africa, right?
Yeah, they took it to Africa. It's got the, you know, beautiful walnut stock with maple inlays.
You gotta have that in Africa, right?
Yeah, you gotta have that in Africa. So that was kind of the testing ground for that rifle. It's kind of like a really cool combination of the new school feel with the action, but an old school look.
Yeah.
It's been really popular for us. We have that Alpine MDT chassis rifle that you were talking about. We sell just the builder's action. And then we are working on some new stuff. I've sent you a few pictures. That will be coming out here pretty soon. I can't talk too much about it, but I think a lot of people are going to like it. It's going to be
great. It is sweet.
Yeah, it's going to be a great value. There's a reason why Kobe was in New Zealand, I guess.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, I'm excited too because – go ahead, Kobe.
The product testing went well, and there's a very, very high chance that gun ends up in my house as well.
Is that the one that might end up in my hands as well?
Yeah, I think you're probably going to get one of these. It's very cool. Let's just, the only hint I'll give is there's a lot of carbon coming. So.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm excited. You've told me a little bit, like very little about it. So I'm excited to see what's up with that, man. Can you say what it's called?
Can't say what it's called. Definitely
okay.
not.
Okay.
But so you guys can mark. So we're about a month away, May 29th. Okay. For you listeners, you want a little sneak, just know May 29th. Something cool is coming.
All right. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. And launch video on that one. So.
Yep.
Okay. Same day, I guess.
Yeah.
May 29th. Cool. Yeah, looking forward to it. Like I said, I'm excited because I literally only shot 15 rounds at the range, and I feel pretty good with it. I got my I put a Leupold VX6 HD on there, 4-24, and I just ordered a custom dial, which those things are
nice.
Good for guys like me who I like to get, you know, I like to nerd out as much as I can, but I only have a certain amount of bandwidth, so having the custom dial just makes it super easy. I don't know.
What Barnes bolt setup did you end up going with?
So this one, I'm sticking with the Barnes 180 grain TTSX, like Vortex. Nice. I'm hoping to, my plan is for the next rifle build to go with 300 PRC, and that will be the LRX, the Barnes LRX, I might try to nerd out a little more on that gun, make it a little more long rangey. Apparently that LRX stuff is a little better past, 400 or 500 yards or to that, range, which I don't shoot much. I shot one animal this year at 567 and I had to put a couple in it. That's about as far as I really want to go, honestly.
Yeah. Everyone has their, comfortable effective range, right? I always like to get into this where it's like everyone's effective range is different. It's like,
yeah,
if you're comfortable, you're steady, it's 500 yards. Is that, that to me is more ethical than someone who doesn't practice is at 200 yards rushing their shot.
Yeah. Well, this was sketch, dude. This is in Oregon on my blacktail hunt. And I'm like on a slope like this, it's raining. I had just had my pack and my trekking poles coming out the side of my pack as my front rest. And I think I might've had somebody else, Luke's pack under my back. It was sketch, dude. But it was just like the only opportunity I had. And it was a huge 140 inch blacktail. So,
I
came right in his office and I was like, dude, you got to see what Hunter just got. Cause that was the next hunt after our hunt.
Yeah, I can't wait to put that one out. And then I filmed Luke kill a really nice, four point with eye guards, a few days later. So I still don't have my Euro back on that guy, which I'm mad about. But it's a really cool film. Looking forward to sharing that one. But yeah, the other thing about me too is I'm coming from out east. So I grew up all my deer hunting, essentially all of it was archery. The county I grew up in, you could not legally shoot a rifle. That's why my first time shooting a deer with a rifle is in Texas. So I grew up just mainly bow hunting and then some shotgun, slug gun type stuff. So it's only been the last 4 or 5 years that I even started messing with rifles. And when I started off, 200 was a long shot. That's kind of now it's kind of the baseline. I'm still not quite to the level of some guys that, grown up, hunting out west and, 500 is their minimum. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what it is. Funny though, once you're dialed, it's all math, right? We had a few people in the office, some customers that we were entertaining, and some of them were experienced, some of them weren't. But at the end of the day, it's just math. So we were dialing out to 1,000. Some of the guys were like, "Hey, this is our first time ever shooting over 200 yards, right?"
Yeah,
and they're hitting steel at 1,000. So,
right. It's different though when you're at a range of the lead sled, at that point. But if I'm talking hunting scenarios where you can get as solid as you can get, but you're still, there's going to be variability in there. And you start getting 500 yards that, one, that half a centimeter flinch that doesn't matter at 200 yards matters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Same thing with even the cant of your rifle. Once you get, past that 300-400 mark, it's all the little things, right? If your rifle's slightly canted, well, then you're going to shoot left or right. It's all of the things, right?
Yeah. I actually, on this.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say really quick, on this one, I'm trying out the Tally rings, and I put the cant, whatever it's called, anti-cant, whatever, top thing on one of them. I'm glad I did because I have a natural kind of cant, so it's kind of nice to be able to have that.
Yeah, one of the things I've learned a lot since is just about windage since I got here, how much your bullet matters, grains, heavier grains drift less in the wind, all that. You know, it's not something I was very attuned to before coming here. I mean, I grew up hunting wide open Mountain West in the mountains and timber and stuff and parks, but I had a all Simmons 3-9 that didn't dial on an .06 growing up and hold on back at 350 yards, and that was my range, just 350, 400 with no dial. And I've shot an elk at that before, but I was shooting 180 grain bullet, didn't have to worry all that much about wind. So now getting here and seeing 65 RPM with 124 grain hammers, it's screaming, but at 400 yards, if it's even 5-10 mile an hour, you'll have that wind drift. So
yeah,
learning a lot about the little stuff like that is going to make you, like, even if you're not the one experiencing it, if you're just the observer like me and filming, you can still take those situations and learn from them and become a better shooter, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited about trying the 300 PRC. I like having a 30 caliber bullet. And supposedly it's a little faster, a little flatter, but I don't know. What do you guys, if you guys are picking a cartridge, what are you picking?
Ooh, I feel like this question is always hard.
Yeah.
It's always a loaded question.
Definitely.
we get a little bit spoiled where when you think of like a rifle as a tool, I have kind of like two different ways. A rifle is kind of a tool. So it's like, what is the best cartridge for the scenario, game, all the things, right?
Sure.
You get a little bit spoiled on that. But at the end of the day, if I was like, hey, I need to pick an all around rifle round, I'm like a 300 Weatherby guy.
Yeah, all the way.
It's hard to beat a good 30 cal.
It is.
But if I do, there's a lot of fun Weatherby calibers where if you really tailor your hunting to like, if I'm going to just only shoot mule deer, it'd be 257 is pretty awesome. Or if I'm only going to go, if I'm going to be mountain mule deer hunting, then 6.5/300 is the round the cartridge I'd want to do. So,
yeah. I think that if you're someone where you're like, I want to buy two rifles or something like that, and you're going to have I'm going to have a 30 cal cartridge, just like we talked about, 300 Weatherby is what I got. And then on the other one, yeah, I'm looking probably towards something 6.5/300, 6.5 RPM.
Yeah.
That 6.5 Weatherby RPM round has really been intriguing me lately. And so that's kind of where I lean, I think.
It's fun.
But the 257 is just
yeah,
great.
It's also fun. And yeah, we do a lot of we have a lot of cool Barnes options too. So I'm a big fan of Barnes bullets as well. So
yeah.
Yeah, man. So the first nice rifle I ever bought personally with my own money when I kind of started out mountain hunting was the original Mark V Backcountry.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I love that thing. I got it in 6.5. I got it in 6.5 Creedmoor just because ammo availability and, you know, but I kind of wish I had gotten in a Weatherby caliber because you guys are getting some crazy velocities out of those things. But
yeah.
I'm the same way, man. Like, what's that?
We always say velocity kills. When you're looking at like energy, velocity is squared. So we have the velocity when you're talking about your energy and it carrying and stuff is really important.
Yeah. The sound of a, like, remember when we were shooting the 6.5/300 in Texas?
And
the sound of the 6.5/300 hitting the gong at 200 or 300 yards versus what G was.
We had an RPM, but
RPM, but like, the 6.5/300 is significantly more like velocity. It's like, whoa, that thing is
screaming. It's a fun test. If you're to like shoot a, you know, like a 6.5 Creedmoor at 200 or three, let's just say 300 yards and then a 6.5/300, it's like Creedmoor, it's like there's a little bit of time, but like with a 6.5/300, 6.5 RPM, it's like, and it's a big loud gong. It's pretty fun if you ever want to like test like, oh, energy matters kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. It definitely does. Especially
if you're stressed.
It definitely does. But yeah, I'm with you. Like if I'm going to pick one, cause it's nice to have that 6.5 for, like I said, like I'm going to go to Spain in June with Pedro and Puero and we're shooting, you know, chamois and roebuck, which are tiny. And I'm just going to shoot his rifle cause it's just easier, but his is like a 6.5 something. I can't remember which one, but anyway, but yeah, if I'm typically the kind of guy where I like to get like one rifle that I'm really confident, comfortable, and I just hunt the whole year with that same rifle. That's what I've been doing. So I'm going for a 30 cal personally, just because it's enough gun for anything, really.
Yeah. That's what, if you do buy multiple rifles, there's a lot of me that, one tip, or if you do have like the budget, I like to get the same setup. It sounds silly if you're like, oh, I want the same rifle and two different calibers. But like, if you were to get a 6.5 Creedmoor or something, then you get to practice, and then it's the same feel when you bump up to your 30 cal. So like, yeah, with 300 Win Mag, 300 PRC, you're probably not going to go shoot all day. That's not like a cartridge that's designed for that. The barrels aren't designed for that, to just shoot, you know, 25 rounds, right? Just for fun.
Right.
But like 6.5 Creedmoor, if you're doing like a match or something, if you have a very similar setup, I think that translates to your hunting setup very well when you can like have a very similar setup and then, you know, choose a round that's more target focused.
So random question. Can you put a 307 stock on a Mark V?
So the closest thing that we'll have on a Mark V is, so that 307 stock has the same ergonomics as the Peak 44 Bastion stock, which is highlighted on the Mark V High Country and Mark V Apex.
So I could theoretically get, because I really like this stock now that I've gotten used to it, this ergonomic stuff. So I could theoretically get one of those and put it on my backcountry.
Essentially on your backcountry, yes, you get a Peak 44. Yeah, on a Peak 44, you could get a Bastion stock upfit and it would have the same feel as that.
It just isn't going to have your cheek riser
on it.
Yeah. But yeah, cool. Carbon fiber, number of different cool paint jobs on them.
Yeah, I might look into it. Well, cool. So, all right. Coming up on time here, but what are some adventures you guys are ready? And you can say work, or if you got like personal adventures coming up you're excited about.
I think next thing we got on the docket is a spring bear hunt in Montana with some folks over at Onyx. Yes. And right before that, I have a personal raft trip I do every year on the Grand Ronde in Oregon, 90 miles over six days. So that's kind of rest of the spring for me.
Yeah, for me, I'll do kind of transition into like the personal stuff. I'll do turkeys with buddies here in Wyoming and Montana. So I still got a couple of those. And then personally, I'm pretty pumped for Wyoming bear season to start too. So
when does it start?
It starts May 15th here.
That's kind of late, isn't it?
Yeah, Wyoming's definitely different. That's why a lot of people don't travel to Wyoming to bear hunt, because it is very tough because the seasons are later. And it's all on a quota system. So your season can close anytime. So like Idaho, Montana, they don't have a quota system. So it's always open. You know, it's right. Like, you don't have to worry about that. But, you know, for here, it's like we have it's a female mortality. So it's like as soon as a female mortality limit is hit, it closes in 24 hours or something like that. And so it just makes it tough to plan a trip because like last year, some of our local units we're open the whole time, but the year before it was a 2-day thing. So it's like, man, it's pretty tough to try to plan a trip around it. So I'm going to be hopefully dialed in for that May 15th, have a bear found and do some backpacking.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, I'm missing out on the spring bear, but I'm going to do fall bear in Oregon with some local buddies out there that apparently know. And Oregon's got a lot of bears, so I'm looking forward to that. I'll probably shoot this. What's that?
Who are you doing that with?
That's Luke Dusenberry is going to come, and then Luke's cousin that helped us dig up that giant buck. He's going to help us dig up some bears. He's a local dude. He's a veteran, combat veteran, really awesome dude. So, he's going to take us back out.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I've always wanted to do a fall bear.
And it opens August 1st, so it's like, it's great. Dang.
Yeah. And just the fat caps and everything that you have that time of year. It's like spring bears, you can get some that are pretty fatty or you can have some that were pretty run down. So I think it would be cool for that fall hunt that you'll be in. And I'm sure in Oregon, man, those bears are probably eating some pretty tasty berries. So I'm sure they're going to taste really good.
Yeah. And I'm still waiting to hear back. I'm hoping to get my Wyoming General Rifle Elk tag this year. So we'll see on that. But
yeah, if you do that, you'll have to come and do a tour of the facility and come
for sure. Incidentally, I've actually been there before. When I was out in 21, I don't think you guys know Kobe was. I don't think you were working there yet. It was in 2021. I had done a podcast with Adam, and we were – it's this antelope right here. This is my first ever, like, DIY Western successful hunt. I took my cousin. He got his first one. And we stopped by and like chatted with Adam for a little bit and saw, but I didn't get like the real, you know, tour. I just got the,
yeah, you should go get the tour. And then we have a podcast studio and stuff. So we'll get you.
Yeah. If that happens, I'll definitely do that. If not, maybe I'll be out there a bunch. So maybe I can tack it onto one of my other trips or something, but definitely would love to, for sure. All right, guys. Well, anything else didn't talk about that you guys wanted to hit on or anything?
No, man. I mean, we probably could just talk all day if we wanted to.
Of course.
Yeah, I don't have any photos to edit or anything.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you guys for coming on, and looking forward to working with you guys more, and appreciate you.
Sounds good.
See ya. Yeah, it was good to catch up with you, and excited for this, buddy.
Yeah, man. Talk soon.